until recently, you were a longtime resident of Wisconsin, and a lot of your work was set in the Midwest, if not specifically or officially in Wisconsin itself. Do you think that your current recent move to Tennessee is going to change the settings in your future fiction, or if you keep your settings in the Midwest, you're potentially change the way you view the Midwest?
Possibly. I have no idea. You know, I still have my house in Madison. My son is still in Madison. I'm going to go, you know, spend the summers in Madison. And I only just started teaching in Nashville in January. And so I have no idea what will happen. But I'm assuming change is good and change will bring you new things. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on Between the Covers today, Laurie.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
We were talking today with Laurie Moore, the author of Bark. You've been listening to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Pioneering Oregon filmmaker Penny Allen is coming to Portland's Hollywood Theater this Saturday and Sunday for a two-night retrospective of her breakthrough independent films, including newly remastered prints of the 1978 Sundance Award winner Property, the 1981 classic Pay Dirt, and her recent feature Late for My Mother's Funeral, set in France and Algeria. This KBOO-sponsored event features Q&A sessions with Penny, as well as scheduled guests Gus Van Sant, Eric Edwards, and Walt Curtis. It all happens this Saturday and Sunday, April 26th and 27th, at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. More information can be found online at hollywoodtheater.org.
Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO, your lens into the Portland film and video scene. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm SW Conser. Today we'll be focusing on documentaries, archiving, and retrospectives.
Later on in the hour, we'll be speaking with the Portland State University Library's Carly Harrison and Heather Petricelli about a new collection made available online of documentary footage and oral recordings.
And I'll be talking live with Penny Allen, who's in town from France, for a retrospective of her independent films.
But first, I'm joined here in the studio by Janet Wasko, a professor and night chair in communication research at University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, and also by media scholar Eileen Meehan. We're here to discuss this weekend's What is Documentary Conference, of which Janet is a head organizer. The conference kicks off tonight at the Northwest Film Center and continues through Saturday the 26th in UO's Turnbull Center in Old Town, the school's base in Portland. Thank you so much for joining me, Professor Wasko and Eileen Meehan.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So the What is Documentary Conference is only actually the latest in a series of conferences put on by your program at the University of Oregon. Can you speak a little bit on how and why the What Is conference series was established?
Yes, I would be happy to. And thank you for talking to us today.
Absolutely. Glad to have you ladies here.
Yeah, a few years ago, I'm fortunate enough to have this endowed chair, the Knight Chair in Communication Research. And a few years ago, we decided, well, let's use some of those funds to do something in Portland that might be interesting. Some of my work is in film, not documentary film. And I thought it might be an interesting idea to ask the question, since media, specifically film, was changing so much these days, what is film? Question mark these days, but also in terms of where it's come from, what's going on now, and what's might be happening in the future. And so we send out a call for papers from academics and a lot of interest from people, not only in the U.S., but international scholars. But also we worked with some of the people in Portland, some professionals, film people, the Governor's Film Board, and so forth. So the conference represented film scholars in addition to government professional film people asking this question, what is film? This was 2010, I believe, November, and everyone said, oh, what's next? Let's do this again, because it was quite successful. So we thought, okay, well, what is television was the next one, and we did a similar kind of gathering of academics, students, professionals, and so forth. It was also fairly successful. What followed last year was another one called What is Radio? That was very successful and very interesting in terms of international participants.
Oh, really?
And so forth.
That,
yeah.
That was very interesting.
Yes. And good. So this year we are asking, what is documentary? And not, we're trying to get people to think beyond film. Documentary in the broadest sense. What is documentary? What does it mean to document things? What is documentary? What different kinds of media are used?
Yeah.
So that's the question we're asking this year.
Yeah, and one of the most interesting things to me, as you know, a film buff and the host of a show about film, is, you know, I was expecting to click through online to the What is Documentary conference and find that it was being put on by a film school. But instead, your school is a School of Journalism and Communication. And I wanted to ask a little bit about how the perspective from, you know, a journalist or from a media professional on what documentary is might be different than a film buff or a filmmaker.
Well, my answer is that it may indeed not be different. We are a School of Journalism and Communication.
Yes.
We have quite a few people who do produce documentary films, video, and so forth.
Oh,
teach
so there,
that to students.
So
right.
There are filmmakers within the
absolutely.
School. Oh, wonderful.
Absolutely. In fact,
great.
One of the core... The co-organizer of the conference, Gabriela Martinez, is a documentary maker. We have several people on our faculty. Another person, Dan Miller, who will be speaking at the conference, is a documentary filmmaker. But also, I have to add that we do have at University of Oregon now a film studies program, and it's connected to the School of Journalism and Communication, but in a way somewhat separate. It's an undergraduate program. So, and they're involved in this conference as well.
Terrific. So now, much of the conference, you mentioned a couple speakers. Much of the conference will be made up of panels and plenary speakers and paper presentations on a variety of issues, some of which you have already delved into a little bit. What are some of the topics that come to mind that you think illustrate the best this theme of how the boundaries of the documentary genre are expanding as media evolves and globalizes?
Yeah. Well, I think that if one looks at the program, the wide array of themes and issues give you an idea of how we're trying to really push beyond just talking about documentary film, but also, for instance, there's a lot of questions of what is documentary, looking at digital distribution of documentaries and so forth. But also there's a whole panel on reality television. What's the difference between reality television and documentary?
Yes,
and
Eileen is involved with that panel.
Yes.
Can you briefly tell me what that's going to be about?
Well, one of the things we're going to be looking at are documentaries that don't have the kind of halo that is usually attached to film documentaries. We're going to be looking at documentaries that are highly produced, highly ritualized, that examine things like the housewives of Portland, perhaps, or in my case, Dog the Bounty Hunter. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be looking at the difference between Dog the Bounty Hunter, which has very high production values for TV, versus World's Dumbest. And the particular material there that I'm going to be looking at are surveillance tapes, where the narrative is not in the tape itself. In those 33 seconds, as the guy holds up the liquor store, you don't get a lot of information. And so surrounding that is a series of commentaries and of jokes that tell us what we see, because we can't actually see it on TV.
Yeah, no, that is perfectly exemplary of what we're talking about how the traditional the definition of documentary is really changing as media evolves. So of course there's also going to be screenings involved. I know one in particular centers around the work of documentarian and University of Oregon alumnus James Blue. That screening of his work will be tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center. But there's also almost a dozen screenings that are in conjunction with the festival. What kind of people are the filmmakers here? Are they students or professionals, professors, or everybody?
Yeah. There is a variety of people. I'm glad you mentioned James Blue, because there's quite a few events, two panels specifically that will focus on James Blue, in addition to screenings of his work at the Northwest Film Center. We are receiving support from the James and Richard Blue Foundation, by the way.
Okay.
So there's a lot of attention to him as a filmmaker, and he's quite interesting. But beyond that, tomorrow, Friday, there's an entire day of screenings, and most of these, I would say, are academics, but people who produce documentaries but also teach documentaries to students or teach the analysis of documentaries. I would say all of them are professors. So we don't have student productions per se, but these people, I would say all of them work with students to produce documentaries.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is you know, obviously a primarily academic conference, but just as we close, I wanted to ask what do you think the value of this conversation is, reaching past academia, and how should these themes have value to the public?
Yeah, I think we do have a number of independent filmmakers, documentary producers, and others not connected to academe. We have tried very much to make the conferences of interest to the community. It's an opportunity to, learn something about these issues, these changing media issues, and in this case, to see some very interesting documentaries and hear people talk about them.
Terrific. Well, it sounds fascinating, and I hope everybody agrees. Do you guys have a website that you can direct people to register or get more information?
Yes, it's soj.co/whatisdoc.
Great. I'm so glad you guys stopped by the studios to tell us about the conference, and I hope the weekend goes swimmingly. I've been speaking with Professor Janet Wasko and media scholar Eileen Meehan from University of Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Great fun.
All right, now we'll go to Conch, who is speaking with filmmaker Penny Allen about her upcoming retrospective.
Thanks, Jen. Yes, this is SW Concert with the Film Show, and here in the studio, back to Portland from France, is rogue indie filmmaker Penny Allen. She's in town for a retrospective this weekend at the Hollywood Theater. Saturday and Sunday, there are screenings of many of her films, both old and new. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much,
Concert. So So let's talk about the films that are playing Saturday night at the Hollywood Theater. These are Property from 1978 and Pay Dirt from 1981.
Right, exactly. And I think Property's at 7 o'clock and Pay Dirt's at 9:30. And I'm really excited about it. It's been a long time since those films have been shown, and especially they've never been shown together. And you know, I think it's a real, a real look at kind of a capsule, a time capsule of what Portland was like in the late 70s and early 80s. And you know, I call them my land use films because they both are concerned with those kinds of issues, even though they're far, you wouldn't think that from the subject matter, really.
And you've actually gone on to a career in land use in France, working in various ministries, and also it's been a concern of yours over the years, Eastern Oregon, Western Oregon, and you come back every year to Portland.
Yes, exactly. I can't say that I've really gone on to land use. It was more environmental work that I did there. And actually, somebody recently said, you know, I have the other two films that are showing on Sunday are The Soldier's Tale and Late for My Mother's Funeral, which are far removed from the Portland films. But, you know, somebody said, well, you know, they're kind of land use too. And I can, you know, it's a far-fetched idea because that's like saying, well, is war land use? Well, it is sort of, in a way. But that's and then the next one, land use, is, you know, what is really border issues, border identities, and you know, so it's become more abstract in my way of thinking, I think.
Yes, Sunday night, The Soldier's Tale is a real life story of your relationship, kind of a chance relationship with an Iraqi vet that's coming home from the war.
Right. Actually, when we met by accident in an airplane, he was just on leave, and he totally traumatized me, and then later sent me material, photographs and videos that his unit had done, and I later incorporated them first into a roman photo. What do you call that in English? You know, a sort of like a comic book, except that it's photos instead of drawings. And which will be shown, by the way, this will be hanging in the Hollywood Theater that night or that day on that weekend, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And then later I made it into a film and re-encountered him intentionally. And
then Late for My Mother's Funeral played at the Film Center around the holidays last year. And this is going to be another chance to see that. That's set in Algeria, in France, in Morocco. And it's a... Yes, it's a great little meditation on how imperialism and European exceptionalism kind of affects this one family and the entire family and how they get along and how they survive.
Right, it's really a post-colonial look at at the people who were sort of stuck between colonies in former colonies of France. But it's also a very passionate story. You know, that's really the way I think about it. It's very passionate, and the people are very passionate, and they're very accessible and very natural. And people kind of wonder, how did I manage to get them to be so natural? And that's part of the magic of the movie.
Well, there will be Q&As every night with you, Q&As after every screening, which is great. And some of the people that you gave a start to back in the late 70s will be on hand to talk on Saturday. That includes Gus Van Sant, who ran sound on Property and also on Pay Dirt?
No, just on Property.
Just on Property. Eric Edwards, cinematographer. He was the cinematographer on your features, and he's gone on to a number of Hollywood productions since then. And, of course, Walt Curtis, who met Gus Van Sant on Property and ended up turning his book Malinoche into Gus's first feature film.
Right,
exactly. So it'll be a real rogues gallery.
I know it. It'll be very exciting to be together on stage.
Well, this is Saturday and Sunday, 26th and 27th of April at the Hollywood Theater, and there's more information at hollywoodtheater.org. We have some tickets to give away, three pairs of tickets to each night, and if you are the first through sixth callers, you can ask whether Saturday is available or Sunday is available, and that number to call is 503-231-8032. So be one of the first six callers, and we're giving away, again, three pairs of tickets to Saturday, three pairs of tickets to Sunday at the Penny Allen Retrospective at the Hollywood Theater. That number, again, is 503-231-8032. 8032. Penny, thanks so much for coming back and joining us in the film show.
Thank you very much, Concha. It was a pleasure.
And we'll go back to Jen, who is interviewing some folks about the archiving scene here in Portland.
Yes, I'd like to turn our attention now to a new wealth of documentary footage and oral recordings steeped in Portland history that's recently been digitized and made available online by Portland State University. This week, I stopped by the campus to speak with the PSU Library's Carolee Harrison and Heather Petrocelli, an oral historian involved with the project, to learn about the Center for the Moving Image collection. Harrison and Heather Petrocelli, thank you so much for having me join you here today.
Thank you.
So first of all, can you tell us where we are?
Well, we are in the reading room at Portland State University Special Collections and University Archives. And this is the public area for entrance to the archives. And this is also where the film collection held by Tom Taylor, part of the CMI collection, is held here, as well as other university history resources and a rare book collection.
The collection in particular that we're here to talk about, the Center for the Moving Image Collection. This revolves around the Center for the Moving Image, or CMI, a film program established at PSU in 1969 and Oregon's first college film program. Can you guys tell me a little bit about the people behind CMI and how it got off the ground in 1969?
In the late 50s, around 1957, a gentleman named Andres Steinem, who had been blacklisted from education at the University of Southern California, USC, received basically an appointment at the Portland Extension Center. Dynam taught film in Portland for many years before Portland State University allowed him to create the Center for the Moving Image in 1969. He brought a man named Tom Taylor, who had been his student at USC, to help him run the practical, the hands-on production side.
It existed until 1981, is that right?
Yeah, the last class stopped in 82.
So we have over a decade then of film student work. I understand one of several components of this CMI collection are some of the films produced by CMI students that have been digitized, mostly documentaries. What type of local history do these films uncover?
Well, it's a range. There are some interviews with artists and educators in Portland. There are some documentaries that deal with urban renewal and urban planning in Portland. There are some documentaries that deal with alternative lifestyles, a couple that deal with co-op living. And there's a television program hosted by Andres Steinem.
And then probably the best known one, I think, arguably, would be The Seventh Day.
That was about a PSU student action, correct?
It was. It was filmed by a student filmmaker who went and joined the demonstration and filmed it kind of while it was happening.
Oh, wow.
But this was in the demonstration that was in response to police violence and riot that had happened at Portland State at the conclusion of student strike.
So was this sort of immersive documentary style something in particular that was being taught at CMI, or were there any genres or styles that may be representative of some of the work by CMI students of that time?
I mean, basically, you name a genre, probably a student made a film in that genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jim Blashfield, who I think is an amazing filmmaker, has a very experimental style, and he was a CMI student. He became a CMI teacher. I think the key, though, is even when you cross genres away from documentary, it was about the task of film being socially engaging. The task of film is not to show the catastrophe of something that had happened, say it's a flood or say, you know, any kind of major catastrophe. The task of film is to show the human aftermath of how people come together, work together, do things.
Another primary component of the collection was produced by you, Heather. It's a collection of oral histories recorded a few years ago with 10 former students. Can you tell me how you got initially involved with Special Collections and with this project?
The truthful story is that I have been a lifelong film person, and I had a cohort who basically had come into this space we're physically standing in and got a tour of the archive, and she saw cans of film, and she was like, "What's this?" And the archivist, Chris, was like, "Oh, we just got that." She came to me and was like, "You need to go talk to this woman in Special Collections and Archives," which I didn't know even existed. And I came, and within a week of them receiving the collection, I was in contact with Chris. The thing that was the key was that I always wanted to know why Portland had such a vibrant film community. And then every single like onion peel I moved back, every layer that got removed, the more I started learning about Dynam, Taylor, CMI, the students, and what the students have done, the better I understood how integral this center, this community was to a lot of the stuff we see today.
The interviews that you recorded are long, many pushing 2 hours, and there's a very diverse list of interviewees, some of whom are very established in the film community. You mentioned Jim Blashfield, or the co-founder of the Northwest Film Center, Brooke Jacobson, to name a couple. What did you find so compelling about their stories in the way that you say as representative of what the film community has become today?
When it comes to oral history methodology, the thing that connects and resonates with me is that you can go and talk to a Brooke, you can talk to a Jim, you can talk to a Bill Bowling, and you can understand how these people's lives and the work they did fit into the context of the times, how they helped create the context of the times, and how what they did then reverberates out to today. It's the small stories of history that make the waves of change. That's, to me, history is tracking change over time and cause and effect. And it's always these little people doing things that can make very big waves of change. The oral history methodology was a way of, once I picked out a few names I saw come up a few times, it was a way of understanding the meaning behind these two men. You have Andres Dynam, you have Tom Taylor. I had a list of things that they had done, a list of things that they had said, a list of a few accomplishments, but I didn't understand who these men were, what their existence and their teaching and their beings, how they affected students that they taught. So I'm a huge fan of oral history because not only do I find people's stories interesting, but I think also you get the context of how these lives fit into social movements of broader strokes of what we would call U.S. history, especially in the time of the late 60s and early 70s.
We've talked a lot about the history of the film community, the history of Portland, the history of the school. Why would you say that Portlanders, either within the film community or not, should be interested in exploring this work?
The reason I would suggest Portlanders to go check out the films that are digitized, to see all the different slices of life, to see how attitudes have changed or remain the same, to see how the built environment has changed or remained the same.
I feel like it's important to talk about this collection in terms of its lens on the history of Portland, like downtown Portland and Portland State. Mm-hmm. But there are also films in this collection that show other aspects of urban history in Portland. And also there's an interview, for example, with the artist Helen Frankenthaler, and it shows student engagement with the artist. There's an interview with Helen Gordon, who at the time was the head of the nursery school, Jewish Community Center, but she went on to become the director of the daycare at Portland State University, and she is now the one for whom the center is named for, the Helen Gordon Child Care Center. Mm-hmm. She discusses her philosophy on daycare and child care. There's a film called The Albina Murals, which interviews artists and community members who participated in the creation of public art in the Albina neighborhood. I mean, like Heather said, if something was going on in Portland, a CMI student was probably filming it. And this is just a small cross-section of what was going on at that time.
Thank you so much. I've been here in the Portland State University Library's Special Collections Room speaking with Carolee Harrison and Heather Petrocelli about the Center for Moving Image Collection. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me and for having me here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
All right, and before we go today, we're going to bring you our monthly film calendar of events around the Portland area that you might be interested in. Tonight, April 24th, the Oregon Historical Society presents silent films from the Moving Image Collection at the Hollywood Theater at 7 p.m. The program from their permanent collection will be accompanied by live piano. For more info, visit hollywoodtheater.org.
On April 25th, Portland's Latin American Film Festival will screen the Mexican thriller Colosio, The Assassination, at 7 p.m., also on the Hollywood Theater as part of their monthly screening series. Details at hollywoodtheater.org.
On May 1st, the Northwest Film Center will showcase two films by Irene Taylor Brodsky, One Last Hug and a Few Smooches, and the Oscar-nominated The Final Inch, beginning at 7 p.m. More info about the screening at nwfilm.org, or you can find a podcast of our January interview with Irene at our website, kboo.fm/thefilmshow.
On May 3rd, the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival, or POWFEST, will present the premiere of Beth Harrington's film The Winding Stream at the Hollywood Theater at 6:30 p.m. The Roots music documentary tells the story of the Carter family and its influence on Johnny Cash. For more info, visit thewindingstream.com.
On May 8th, KBOO's own film series at the Clinton Street Theater continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Queen of the Sun, a documentary about the global bee crisis surrounding colony collapse disorder. More info at cstpdx.com.
From May 12th through the 18th, the Northwest Animation Festival will take place at the Hollywood Theater, featuring 174 international animated shorts, guest-curated programs, animation installations, after-parties, and more. For a program and schedule, go to nwanimationfest.org.
And May 15th through the 18th marks the return of QDoc, the only festival exclusively dedicated to LGBT documentaries. Opening night at the Northwest Film Center will feature a screening of The Case Against 8, about the fight to overturn California's Proposition 8, with directors in attendance. All other films will screen at McMenamin's Kennedy School. Details can be found at queerdocfest.org. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for the film calendar and the film show. I'd like to thank our guests today, Janet Wasko and Eileen Meehan, Penny Allen, Carolee Harrison, and Heather Petrocelli, a full bill today.
And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. This audio will be available later at kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And follow us on Twitter at @KBOOFilmShow. Thanks, as always, to the OMPA, who are celebrating their directory release party today from 4 to 8 p.m. at Kerner Camera Systems, 2323 North Williams. More info at ompa.org.
I'm Jen Chavez.
I'm SW Conser. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Lowell Hearst Theater and Pub.